Father, I stretch my before I drew my breath, what did thine lonely son in be? Sing that for me tonight. That's what I've been doing all these years. I want to read to you from the 11th, from the book of Deuteronomy, the 32nd chapter, the 11th and 12th verses. You are familiar by this time with the subject, but I want to just read for you the actual text. As an eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, beareth them on her wings. So the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him. The eagle stirs her nest. A lot of people have come to me telling me, calling me about the subject. Some of them said the eagle stirs his nest. One said the buzzard stirs his nest. Another one said you preaching on the chicken stirring his nest. So I've heard all kinds of things concerning this subject, but according to the rendering in the Bible, it is the eagle stirs her nest.
Yes, sir.
You see, Now, may I just, by introduction, say that this particular passage that I have chosen comes out of that part of the Bible which we call the Pentateuch, yes, sir, or more commonly called the books of the law. This part of the Bible, according to lay people, was written as events took place. But it wasn't written like that. It was written time after time and track after track, and some of it was preserved and some of it was lost.
Yes, sir.
And it did not come into a whole or a synthesis until the Babylonian exile.
Yes, sir.
It was then that the priests and the Levites, who found themselves in the throes of a dilemma, in a crisis. I see Mrs. Ollie Mae Patterson over there, my daughter Irma's mother-in-law. They found themselves in trouble. And it's a funny thing that most people don't think too much about God or themselves or their destiny until they get in trouble. So when they were carried off to Babylon by the conquest of Nebuchadnezzar and enslaved, they did a very unique thing. They did not do what most of the people in this part of the world did. Usually, people in that part of the world, in the Euphrates Valley or in the Mediterranean area, when their gods fell, or when they were conquered by other people, they forsook their gods because they considered that their gods had fallen.
Yes, yes.
But the Jews or the Hebrews did a very unique thing. When their nation fell, they didn't put it on their God. They said, we are responsible.
Yes, sir.
It's our backsliding ways. It's our sins that have brought this calamity upon us. And what we need to do is to re-examine the law and the prophets and reinterpret them and synthesize them into a whole. Not only for ourselves, but for generations to come. I don't believe you're going to pray with me tonight. So that this passage that I have read in your hearing comes from out of this situation.
Yes.
Now, I want you to understand that the writer here is personifying the nation.
Yes.
And he's using great symbolism. Now, Jacob, who is called here, is a personification of Israel.
Yes.
The eagle is a personification of God. The nest that the eagle was stirring is a personification of history. He is saying, just as the eagle stirs her nest, fluttereth over her young, spread abroad her wings and protect them. Yahweh has done that in history for Israel. That's what he's really saying. By personification, you say, sometimes you say, well, the Negro does this. You're not talking about one person.
Right.
You're talking about the whole ethnic group.
Yes, sir.
And this is what is going on here. Moses did not write this. But you see, as I refer to our teachers who teach us English, will agree with me when I said this is in the third person. And when any writing is in the third person, it is written by somebody about somebody else. You see, it is the first person. If I say I am doing so, that's the first person. If I say you are doing so and so, that's the second person.
Yes.
But if I said John did such and such thing, that's the third person.
Yeah.
So this is Moses writing. This is somebody writing about Moses.
Yes.
This is somebody writing about Israel.
Yes.
You don't hear what I'm saying. Now, he talks about the protection of the eagle and symbolizing the eagle with God. The eagle is a regal bird. You don't hear me. The eagle is a regal bird. And by regal, I mean kingly, royal.
Yes.
Royal. And in this way, the eagle symbolizes God, because God is not just a king.
No.
He is the king.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm glad it's that way, because kings and rulers got to have somebody over them, and they've got to be accountable to somebody. So in this way, the eagle symbolizes God in his regalness. And then in the next place, the eagle is strong. Is strong. It is said that the eagle can fly along, look down, and see a young lamb or a young animal grazing in a meadow by a mountainside and swoop down upon that unsuspecting lamb or animal and grab him in the strength of his paws or feet and fly away to yonder's cleft and devour him. He's just that strong. God is strong. You don't hear me. God is strong. Somebody said that he upholds and undergirds the universe. Somebody said that this planet that we live on called Earth, we know by now that it is not built upon a platform. It doesn't have anything holding up that's visible. But it is held in place by two countering forces called centrifugal and centrifugal forces. And they balance each other. You don't hear me. All they are talking about when they say that is just talking about how strong God is. Huh? So strong that somebody called him a leaning post in Zion that millions could lean on.
Yes, sir.
and be substantiated and be secure. And somebody called him a city of refuge. And then they called him a fortress. Now, you know that that's talking about strong, isn't it? So in that way, the eagle symbolizes God. Then you see the eagle is swift. Swift. It is said that the eagle can fly with such swiftness that his wings can be heard roaring in the air. And at the approach of a storm, he can zoom up above the storm and get out of the fury of the storm. Well, in that way, the eagle symbolizes God. For God, you see, is swift. You don't hear me. He's swift. Well, I could tell you many, many instances of his swiftness, but I'll just tell you about one. One day down in Babylon, three Hebrew boys got in trouble. They got in trouble with the king because they would not recognize and respect the ceremony dedicating a new god. Somewhere in their history, in their cultural background, they had something which said, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And they wouldn't buy. By the time that they had made it clear that they wouldn't buy and were sentenced to a fiery furnace, God was so swift. He was there before they could get him from court to the furnace and was walking around in the furnace, air conditioning the fiery furnace, so that it didn't send a hair on their heads. Oh, he's swift. Huh? He's swift. I believe that he's so swift. Sometime he will hear you and answer you before you get through answering him. Before you get through asking him, the answer is already there. Peter had that experience along with the Christians one time when he was in jail. He's swift. And I'll tell you another thing about the eagle. The eagle, it is said, builds her nest in a peculiar way. It is said that the eagle builds a nest in a kind of a huge fashion to fit her own anatomy and that of her young. But basically, the nest is rather crude and rough. But then as that nest graduates toward a finish, it is said that the material becomes finer and finer and finally soft and downy like cotton. So that the little eaglets can be comfortable in the nest. But when those eaglets have grown up and ought to be out scuffling for themselves, that parent eagle push them out of the nest, take them upon her back, fly out into the blue yonder. And when they are unsuspecting, she dives from beneath them and leave them flopping their little wings, trying to stay aloft. It is said that she circles around above them and watch them while they struggle. And she knows when they have become exhausted. She knows when they can't stay aloft any longer. And when they are about to go down, she dives beneath them and catch them on her back. I think God does us like us. God does us like that sometime. I believe that sometime we find ourselves in the comfortable nest of circumstances, luxury or security or both, and we get so comfortable we don't bother to struggle. We are satisfied right where we are. Then God take us out. Allow some circumstances to develop to push us out of our nest of security. And then when we find ourselves, we're on our own wing. Well, haven't you felt like that sometime? Sometime in prayer, you reach out and it doesn't seem that he's there. Like Job, you go out ahead and you turn to the right and to the left. And you go back over your path and it doesn't seem that he's there. Or he's there all right, as he's everywhere. He's above us. He's looking down on us. But he's allowing us to try our own ways. I don't believe you hear me tonight. And before we really fall, he will come in and catch us when we are descending. I don't believe you hear me. But what I'm about to say, that, you know, preaching means nothing except just reciting Bible stories. Unless you can make it relevant to life today. Now, the question is God still stirring the nest? That's what I want to ask you. Yes, he's still stirring the nest. He stirred the nest in history when we came as slaves to this country. You don't hear me. I know it was rough, and I know it was bad, and I know that we had a hard time. Oh Lord. And we feel that it was a long time. It was, according to our calendars. But you see, God doesn't work by our calendars. He works by eternity. Oh, Lord. So 400 years was just a little while with God. You don't hear me tonight. Looking back, it looked like to me it was a long time. Oh, Lord. It seemed like the night was too long. But God, it was just a minute in eternity. And my great-grandparents were slaves. But oh, look where her great-grandson stands tonight. Oh, Lord. Why, God has been stirring the nest. Oh, Lord. In suffering, there is redemption. Oh, Lord. Unfortunately, for us to be ourselves, we have to suffer. Unfortunately, for us to know ourselves, sometimes we have to suffer. Oh, Lord. And my great-grandparents and their parents suffered vicariously for me and for you. You don't hear me tonight. I see God stirring the nest. In labor, God stirred the nest. You don't hear me. I sat in labor when they had the labor war and the labor struggled. Oh, Lord. When men were made to work from kin to kin, it was God stirring the nest. You go to the factory now. You get a guarantee of so much an hour. And you work under humane labor conditions. Because in the labor struggle, God stirred the nest. I wish I had somebody here to pray with me. God was stirring the nest. Yeah. And then, may I say, another instance where God was stirring the nest. After World War I, well, the black man had never been seen in this country anymore. A new world for him, and his outlook was different. And after traversing the soil of Europe, he was no more satisfied and down on the floor. And the black migration about a million from the south to the north was gone. Stirring the nest. You don't hear me. Not only World War I, but World War II and all the other wars. Suffering, yes. It was killing, yes. It was bloodshed, yes. But it takes some time for God to bring us where He wants us. Oh, yes, it does. Hold on. And now, right now, God is not only stirring us in the domestic situation, oh Lord, but in this world, God is stirring us. Yes. Through Martin Luther King, God stirred us. Trouble. I know what God is doing. I know what He's been doing in my life. Yes, I do. Every time a storm
rock me from one side to another. I know it is the Lord.